is Europe taking the Russian threat seriously? The level of debate regarding the Russian threat to Europe has increased. Emmanuel Macron's statement that sending troops to Ukraine is possible stirred up the infospace and caused an ambiguous reaction from NATO allies. The message, however, reached the Russian leadership, bringing with it yet another warning of, quote, tragic consequences, end quote. But what do the statements of European leaders mean? You're listening to the podcast Explain Ukraine. The Explain Ukraine podcast is produced by Ukraine World, an English language website about Ukraine. My name is Volodymyr Yarmolenko. I am a Ukrainian philosopher, journalist, chief editor of Ukraine World, and president of PEN Ukraine. I invite you to a regular conversation between my colleagues, Anastasia Harisymchuk and Daria Synhayevska, journalists and analysts at Ukraine World, who analyzed key events in and around Ukraine during the last week. Let me remind you that Ukraine World is brought to you by Internews Ukraine, one of the largest Ukrainian media NGOs. Let me also remind you that you can support our work at patreon.com/ukraineworld. We provide exclusive content for our patrons. You can also support our volunteer trips to the front lines at paypal.ukraine.resisting@gmail.com. You can find these links in the description of this episode.
On the 26th of February, the meeting of Ukraine's European allies took place in Paris, and it was organized under the leadership of the French president. And this meeting was convened amid the difficult situation Ukraine is facing on the front lines these days, and especially amid the, let's say, improper response, improper actions to counter Russian threats, because we know that Ukraine doesn't receive enough ammunition, and it hinders the situation on the ground and worsens the perspectives of positive outcome of the war. So this meeting was a working meeting or informal summit to find the ways to enhance cooperation between European leaders in order to support Ukraine. And about 20 participants took part in this meeting, including the heads of Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, Estonia, Poland, also the US, Canadian, and British representatives took part in this meeting. So the discussions actually were very productive, and we do not know all the details of how the negotiations, how the talks, these were not actually negotiations, but talks to find the solutions and effective ways to help Ukraine in this difficult situation. So even though we don't know all the details and how heated debates were, the leaders, the European leaders, and especially Emmanuel Macron, who held this meeting, told about the results. And it was agreed that a new coalition is going to be created, a coalition of medium and long-range missiles. The Ukraine's allies also talked about the supplies of ammunition, the most acute topic for Ukraine these days. And they discussed new ways, new impetus to boost the production of ammunition in Europe. There were also thoughts about joint production with Ukraine. And what is extremely important here, that the European leaders agreed to the scheme, to the mechanism of purchasing ammunition outside of Europe. It's actually the solution that was found by the by the Czech president, since it was his idea and the Czech decision to buy ammunition outside of Europe and to transfer them to Ukraine. And now the European leaders actually agreed to use this scheme. Besides these practical, alongside with these practical solutions, Macron made several important, let's say, political statements. And one of the key statements was that he told that the Russian defeat is the condition for security and stability in Europe. It indicates like a change of rhetoric in the Western Europe, because we heard such ideas, such thoughts from different politicians in Europe, but mostly this understanding of the Russian danger, like the serious understanding of the Russian danger, was more peculiar to Eastern Europe and European leaders, but not the leaders of separate countries, especially in the west of Europe. Now, the French leader, who in the beginning of the full-scale invasion told about the necessity to save the image of the Russian president, now he talks about the necessity of Russian defeat, which is a condition for European security. And the most important thought idea that he expressed and that stirred up the whole Europe was about the sending European troops to Ukraine. And after Macron expressed this idea, other European leaders almost immediately rejected this idea and told that they are not going to send their troops to Ukraine. NATO leader, the NATO Secretary General, told about it, as well as the German, US, and UK leaders. Like, they do not put the option of sending troops to Ukraine on the table. However, it shouldn't be a disappointment for Ukrainians that Europeans do not express this willingness or immediate readiness to send their troops to Ukraine. And the fact, actually, the most important in this expressing this idea was that it actually was expressed. And Macron himself didn't tell that it is a decided action or it will inevitably happen. He told that the option isn't off the table. So even though there is no wide support, the option isn't off the table. Later, several days later, the French president told that every word he told after the meeting was well thought out, and it was not something like emotional. So it was well thought out. And a bit later, again, Macron told that what he told actually is a discussion, is ongoing discussion, and it doesn't mean that France will send its troops to Ukraine in the nearest future. Zooming out and looking at the situation from outside, not focusing on this practical dimension of this idea, I mean exactly sending troops to Ukraine, which is, to be honest, not that highly possible, we should pay attention to political signals of this rhetoric, and we should pay attention exactly what kind of discussion and debate is going on in Europe now, and how the angle of this discussion changed after the 2 years of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. So it is important to pay attention to two factors that actually explain the context in which the meeting itself took place and in which these important statements were made. So the first thing worth our attention is that this meeting took place against the backdrop of American political process, let's say. Happened while the American side still cannot approve the allocation of funds to Ukraine, and we see that the USA is going deeper and deeper to the election process, and is getting like slightly further from the international and global issues, focusing exactly on the domestic processes. So this meeting and this discussion actually was maybe a sign of understanding among Europeans that European security cannot be relied on Americans only. And actually, European states should take actions to strengthen their security, and relying on any other outside force is not actually an effective way to cope with the threats emanating no matter from Russia or any other forces. We can see, we can look at these talks, at this rhetoric, at this kind of meeting as at the attempt to, identify the role of Europe itself as the guarantor of their own stability and security. Another factor worth attention is that these talks and this meeting was held among the talks about the fatigue of the war. So this way, even though the fatigue is present among European societies and we see it in the Western media, holding such negotiations, trying to find the ways out, European leaders want to show to the world and to their societies as well that actually there is no fatigue of Ukraine, and no matter how difficult it is, but it is necessary to find the ways to give a proper response to the Russian threat. These were two factors that were the background for this meeting. And when we talk about the practical terms and some symbolic meaning of what was discussed, of what was said, we should first of all pay attention to the change of rhetoric, as I've already told. Now Europeans, European leaders talk more and more about the necessity to strengthen their security, and they talk about the Russian threat more in more serious terms. If Macron didn't actually mean to send troops to Ukraine, so why would he express this idea at all? Why would he tease Russia? The first thing that comes to mind is creation of the strategic ambiguity. So Macron wasn't very clear about this action. He told himself that it is not decided yet, but we cannot exclude any possibility. We are ready to take every action to actually support Ukraine and to eliminate Russian threats. So this situation when there is this idea, when there is this, let's say, threat, but it is not actually clear if it happens or not, it is called strategic ambiguity. So the enemy, the rival, would know that there are no guarantees that something negative wouldn't happen. And that's this strategic game of geopolitical players while they're threatening, and it is not clear if these threats will be fulfilled. It's the same thing that Russia is doing, talking about their nuclear weapons. Talking about the possibility of its use from time to time is actually also the way to create this strategic ambiguity. Aim of this expressing this idea might be working with the opinions of European population. European leaders talk more and more about the necessity for Europe to take its destiny into their hands. And European leaders talk more and more about the Russian threat, so that the European population understands that these are not jokes and there are real dangers, and it's necessary to be ready to give a proper response to these threats. And when the leaders talk about the European leadership in these processes in defending the liberal world, it also sends the signals to their population, to their society. We also can perceive this idea as an indication for Europeans themselves that these are Ukrainians who are fighting the war, and it's necessary to support them, not to let European people get involved. So we can look at this statement from this angle as well. So taking into account the reactions of politicians and societies in Europe to this statement, we can also perceive it as a certain kind of emphasis on the fact that we are not directly for Europeans, that they are not directly involved in fighting, and what we have to do and what is our responsibility to fulfill is to support the Ukrainians who are actually took the whole burden of this war on their shoulders. And the least thing we can do, and the very important thing we can do, is to provide them with everything they need if we don't want to fight in this war. And this thought is actually also expressed by analysts, some European politicians very often. Like, if we do not want to fight, if we don't want our soldiers to die, we need to give all the necessary support to Ukraine. And following this meeting, not all the European leaders expressed their disagreement with the Macron statement. Because, for example, the Lithuanian leadership, as well as Estonian, Baltic leadership, namely Estonian Prime Minister and Lithuanian Foreign Minister, they told that this option of sending troops to Ukraine shouldn't be perceived as impossible. So all the options should be discussed. So the representatives of Baltic states, they didn't reject this idea. And following the European leaders' meeting, 15 European states joined the Czech initiative to purchase ammunition for Ukraine outside of Europe. And I want also to note that France was the first state that was against the idea of buying ammunition or any kind of weapons outside of Europe. And during this meeting and after this meeting, these 15 states, including France, joined the Czech initiative. Getting out from the context of the Russian aggression itself, and getting out from the context of this meeting, we should pay attention to the debate, more general security debate, which is going on in Europe. And as I've already mentioned, more and more European states talk about the Russian threat, especially it is relevant to the Eastern European states. And in their statements, many European leaders are getting more and more straightforward and direct. For example, the ambassador of Lithuania to Sweden told that The Baltic Sea now is the NATO's inner sea, and if Russia decides to attack NATO, any NATO state, Kaliningrad will be neutralized first. And he didn't explain what he meant by neutralizing. And it gives this space to maneuver for Europeans. So now they are fighting this war in the information space, much more decisive, let's say. And I would also like to mention what was written in the Wall Street Journal regarding the importance of taking more decisive stance on their own security by Europe. It was told, I will quote, "Now it's clear that progress toward global harmony isn't happening, and nourishing such illusions is dangerous. Some, especially on Europe's eastern front line, have fully understood the reality of possible war." So it is actually clearly indicates that there is no more time and no more space to live in the illusions that the security problems can be solved themselves. And when we talk about the war in Ukraine, it's actually not the security issue of Ukraine. We are talking about the whole Europe here and even the whole world. Because if we zoom out and look at the global context, it is the rivalry of democracy and authoritarian regimes. And in this context, Joseph Borrell also told a very important thing. He emphasized this idea that why Europeans have at times, sometimes have this ambiguous attitude or not that decisive attitude. He told that European countries do not take part in this war. That is why they do not fully understand the importance and threats eliminating from this war. And to support this idea, the foreign minister of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, he emphasized this thought. And as a person, as an official representative who is one of the faces of Ukraine, the war in state, and who the state in war, and who understands very well what Russian threat means and what consequences it may have, he told that it's time to switch from these positive signals and get to real actions. And he, first and foremost, he talked about the USA and this prolonged process of allocating help to Ukraine. Kuleba told that Ukrainians are paying high price. They are paying with lives of Ukrainians. But if Ukraine doesn't get weapons, the processes unleashed, they will have repercussions for Americans as well, for Americans themselves. That is why we are at this critical point when the discussions are getting more heated, when the rhetoric is gradually changing, and we see how different it is from the beginning of the full-scale invasion, but at the same time, we still cannot state that the situation is changing, and we see some practical changes on the ground after these discussions and talks among European leaders. Yes, Europe helps Ukraine a great deal, as well as the USA. However, we see this certain sluggishness, which is extremely negative in the context we have now. And if we talk about the defense expenditures, for example, Russia increased its defense expenditures by 300%, while European countries increased them just by 20%. So now we are at this critical point when it will get clear if the talks become actions and serious, effective, and timely actions. And what we have now, it doesn't make much sense to talk about whether the troops will be sent to Ukraine or not, or make prognoses on what will be going on. What we have is to observe the situation. We do not know the full picture. We don't know all the details of negotiations and processes in Europe as well as in the world in general. So we will just try to analyze what is going on actually, and we will observe if the talks will become actions.
And speaking of rivalry that you mentioned, and on the background of this events unleashed, we know that Russian President Vladimir Putin has stated that Russia's strategic nuclear forces are on full combat alert. So I understand that he continues his blackmailing style of politics, although it's hard to call politics as far as it needs a such notion as adequate political contestation, which is not the case of Russia. But he also threatened that Western countries, are encouraging the conflict using nuclear weapons. And this was made, the statements were made during the address to the Federal Assembly. So he said that the strategic nuclear forces are in full readiness. He mentioned the certain type of weaponry, such as Kinjal system, that is already being used in to hit particular important targets during the war in Syria. So he also recalled the crimes that were made around the world and proving his blackmailing plus terrorist formula of governing and waging international politics. He mentioned that Zircon system has already been used in combat and they are already in service. Avangard intercontinental range hypersonic units and Peresvit laser systems on combat duty. He mentioned Burvestnik unlimited range cruise missiles and the Poseidon unmanned underwater vehicle, and many other types of weaponry. And I remember that in previous episode we basically recall the events of several years ago when he said that there is no intent of Russia to attack Ukraine, and now he's saying that, he doesn't want to attack Western countries, and he denied Russia's plans to deploy nuclear weapons in space. A Russian dictator also commented on the discussion of sending Western troops to Ukraine, as he said, they remember the fate of those who send the contingents, and now the consequences for the interventionists, as he called those soldiers, will be much more tragic. As he said, anything the West comes up with really threatens conflict. So this basically is his main stance. It not only threatens a conflict, but also the destruction of civilization, as he said. So nothing new, and we remember that Russia withdrew from the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. So this only proves that no dialogue is possible with terrorists, and that's it. And these hot speeches were delivered amid the Russian aircraft losses. Moreover, as the analysts of Institute of the Study of War said, the Russian army is ready to sacrifice its aircraft in pursuit of at least minimal tactical advance in the Avdiivka direction. The researchers believe that Russian aviation will continue to actively carry out strikes along this Avdiivka-Donetsk line, and they are willing to risk further aviation losses to, pursue some minimal like achievements, and we know that there's going to be what is called Russian elections. Again, it's hard to put this phenomenon under the notion of elections, but at the same time, Russian regime seeks support and legitimacy through showcasing some results of the war that is waging. And Russian forces temporarily established a limited and localized air superiority in the final days of the Avdiivka capture, and they are likely attempting to regain this limited and localized superiority to support tactical advance in this direction, and have decided to continue this pursuit of operations overweighs the risks of losing more aircrafts. Also, Institute of War Study estimates that the loss of at least or around 15 aircraft and possible several highly skilled pilots over the course of approximately 2 weeks is not insignificant for Russian military, given that Russia likely has around 300 different fighters. And we know that Russia is actively using Su-34 bombers to drop-guided aerial bombs, and this powerful weapon has been used by the Russians on massive scale to destroy residential areas and infrastructure in Avdiivka and now in Chasiv Yar and Kurakhovo. And as far as we know, military say that these guided aerial bombs are now one of the biggest problems for the Ukrainian armed forces at the front and for civilians in frontline cities, because Russians are using them in very large quantities. And the enemy is attacking the settlement of Ivanovsky on the Bakhmut axis, with fierce fighting raging there. As far as we know, by the statement delivered by spokesperson for the Eastern Group of Forces, Ilya Yevlash, at the moment, on the Bakhmut axis, the enemy continues to attack the settlement of Ivanovsky, and we know that there is a fierce fighting in this town, and our military is heroically resisting and trying to repel the enemy from their positions, and landing units, motorized rifle regiments, and enemy reserves are being moved there. According to him, enemy aims to capture the settlement of Chasiv Yar, but so far they have been unsuccessful. He noted that Ukrainian defenders were and are on the defensive position, preventing the enemy from advancing. Also, we know that Ukraine started building fortifications on the front line several months ago, and as it was stated, it's very important in a time of war. And they cannot be a wall from, you know, this TV series Game of Thrones. As Dmytro Lihovyi says, that the Ukrainian military is hastily digging fortifications to prevent the occupiers from advancing in Donetsk direction. And the Le Monde article notes that ditches hundreds of meters long have recently appeared just 3 kilometers behind the Ukrainian front line. The construction of fortifications is significantly complicated by both the activity of enemy drones and the lack of equipment designed for this purpose, and about the other developments of the situation on the front line, we can also note that Russian occupational forces intend to capture the village of Novomikhailivka, again in Donetsk direction, as the enemy has concentrated significant forces there and is redeploying reserves. And to prove this, Dmytro Lihovyi, who is spokesman for the Tavria Operational and Strategic Group of Troops, said that there are now more enemy attacks in the area of this settlement than in Avdiivka direction. And he also noted that, for example, on March 3rd, there were 20 attacks in Avdiivka sector and 30 attacks in Novomikhailivka and its surroundings. So we understand that the fighting is fierce, and our defenders do anything they can, and this circles us back to what we previously mentioned, and we can't help but mentioning it again, that support is vital. There's never enough of ammunition, artillery, and other type of weaponry, especially when the war is waged with such massive resource massive state, both in human dimension and in dimension of military production. And at this point, yeah, I guess it's important to also note some diplomatical developments. And now the floor is yours, Nastya.
Indeed, it's very important to pay attention to several diplomatic events, diplomatic steps taken by the Ukrainian side to solidify support of Ukraine in the world. And these events are important within the willingness of Ukraine to diversify its foreign policy directions. And it is actually very important for Ukraine not only to cooperate with its traditional partners, which are Western Europe, the USA, but also reach out to less traditional for Ukrainian diplomacy regions, and to create positive image of Ukraine there, to gain support of these states, and to cooperate closer. What I'm talking about is two important visits that Ukrainian president made the last week. On the 27th of February, he visited Saudi Arabia, where he held talks with the Crown Prince. And the key aim of this visit, actually, we can single out three most important things, three aims which were thought by the Ukrainian side in this meeting. The topic number one and the first priority on this visit was the discussion of the Ukrainian peace formula. And let me remind you that Saudi Arabia is, and it has been one of the states that helped Ukraine to organize the regular meetings within this formula to discuss the ways how to implement it. And In summer 2023, there was this summit in Jeddah, which was organized by joint efforts of the Ukrainian side and Saudi Arabia side. That is why the deeper involvement of Saudi Arabia to support of Ukrainian peace formula is important. And it is important not only in terms of the number of countries that support the Ukrainian peace formula, it is also strategically and diplomatically important looking at the regions. So Saudi Arabia is one of the leaders in the Middle East. So its active participation in implementing or discussing the peace formula is a signal for the region in a whole. And it means that Ukrainian ideas how to reach peace are widely supported, not only by the Western actors. The next important topic that was discussed is prisoners of war swaps and getting back Ukrainian children from deportation. So Saudi Arabia has been a supporter and intermediary in the process of these swaps. And let me remind you that several big exchanges took place with the participation of Saudi Arabia. And taking into account that for Ukraine, getting back its people is extremely important. Continuation of this dialogue with Saudi Arabia is of paramount importance. And last but not least, Ukraine and Saudi Arabia keep talking about the cooperation in the economic sphere. And it's actually the key area of mutual interest because, as we know, Saudi Arabia holds quite close ties with Russia as well. And even though it supports territorial integrity of Ukraine and actually votes for the majority of Ukrainian resolutions in the security in the General Assembly of the United Nations, still there are contacts between Saudi Arabia and Moscow, and we cannot say that the state is in the camp of absolute supporters of Ukraine. So to avoid these sharp points, sharp angles in bilateral relations in political sphere, economic cooperation is what is mutually beneficial and extremely important for Ukraine. And Saudi Arabia is one of the key trade partners of Ukraine in the Middle East in general, and the main trade partner in the Gulf States region. That is why the Zelensky's visit to this country, these talks he held with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, were an important step to strengthen Ukraine's position in the region of Middle East and especially in the Gulf States sub-region, which is the key priority of Ukraine in the region itself. And it was also important in terms of getting some practical gains, such as prisoners of war swaps. And another Zelensky's visit was attention took place on the 28th of February. The president of Ukraine went to Albania, where he met with the prime minister of Albania, and there was a dialogue on the bilateral level. Both states expressed their interest in deepening bilateral cooperation, and Ukraine and Albania signed the agreement on friendship and cooperation, according to which both states are going to deepen their cooperation in the spheres of trade, economy, science, technology, culture, education, healthcare, information, tourism, and sports. So it's a comprehensive framework agreement that would let the states intensify cooperation and deepen their ties. The meeting with the Prime Minister of Albania and signing this agreement was not the only aim of Zelensky's visit. He took part in summit Ukraine Southern Eastern Europe, which was co-organized by the Prime Minister of Albania and the President of Ukraine itself. The representatives of Serbia, Kosovo, Montenegro, Northern Macedonia, Moldova, Croatia, and Bosnia took part at this summit. Why this summit is very important for Ukraine? Because the Balkan region was omitted from Ukrainian diplomacy attention for quite a long time. So we didn't have this systemic view of the region, and the contacts between Ukraine and separate countries of the region were rather sporadic. And when Ukraine is fighting its existential war, it is extremely important to reach out to different regions, especially to ones which tend to support Ukraine, let's say so. According to some experts, the summit was a success because it was the first attempt to to, let's say, establish these ties between Ukraine and region, and to familiarize the Balkan states with Ukraine better, and to start this mutually beneficial dialogue. And as a result of the summit, all the participants signed the declaration, which consisted of 12 points. And what is extremely important in this declaration is that all the participants of this summit admitted that the military aggression against Ukraine by Russia is the biggest threat to European security, and it is a brutal violation of international law norms, and it is the crime against Ukrainian people. So all the participants of the summit reiterated its support for Ukrainian independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity, and they support the idea of giving all the necessary that Ukraine needs to ensure its victory over Russia. However, there was an interesting thing, like the declaration should have contained the point about the necessity to introduce sanctions against Russia and about the malicious influence of Russia in the Balkans region. But these points were not included to the declaration because of the position of the Serbian president. Like, we know about the relations between Serbia and Russia. That is why, even though the president of Serbia took part in this summit and he supported territorial integrity of Ukraine and readiness to support Ukraine, still this key and very telling points were omitted, were not included there exactly because of his position. However, the first step was taken, and the framework agreements and declarations were signed. Now Ukraine has this framework to develop its cooperation with the Balkan states. And by the way, the military technical cooperation is one of the key priorities in these relations, in relations with these states. And the sides are going to organize the Ukrainian Balkan Defense Industry Forum in Kyiv, or maybe in one of the Balkans capitals. These are two positive news, and we are full of hopes that these diplomatic endeavors will bring real results.
And speaking of other important development, we also have to mention the resolution which was adopted by European Parliament. So the Parliament calls on the European Union to give Ukraine everything it needs to defeat Russia. And I would say that the most important things are two above all mentioned. These are there should be no self-imposed restriction on military aid, and EU and NATO allies should provide military support of at least 0.25% of their GDP. The resolution specifically stresses the inadmissibility of attacks against civilians and civilian infrastructure, and surely it calls on Russia to stop the practice of deportation, forcible deportation of Ukrainians from the temporarily occupied territories, and release all Ukrainians held in captivity or imprisonment. And also in light of upcoming elections and Russia's intention to hold presidential elections in the temporarily occupied territories of Ukraine, the European Parliament stresses that it will not recognize the results of these illegal elections. Also, members of Parliament called the European Commission, the EU High Representative, and the governments of the member states to work closely together with Ukraine and the civilized world to establish a special tribunal to investigate and punish the crime of aggression committed against Ukraine by Russian leaders and their proxies. The European Parliament also called on the EU and its members to expand sanctions against the aggressor and to ensure the effective implementation of all 13 packages of such restrictive measures and to eliminate existing circumventing opportunities. I also have to mention that documents contains a number of fundamental provisions, including that Ukraine's main goal remains to win the war with Russia. And I guess it's important narration that it's not about Russia not winning, but about Ukraine winning the war. And this win means the withdrawal of all Russian forces and their collaborators from the entire internationally recognized territory of Ukraine. And this goal can be achieved by continuing stable, meaningful, and uninterrupted assistance to Ukraine with a gradual increase in supply of necessary weapons and equipment. European Parliament reaffirmed its support for the efforts of member states and the EU to supply Ukraine with this necessary weapons, and in light of this, to abandon any self-restrictions in providing such assistance and to deliver to Ukraine weapon in a timely manner, everything that will allow it not only to defend itself against Russian attacks, but also to regain control over the temporarily occupied territories and win this unjust war.
This was a podcast explaining Ukraine by Ukraine World, a website in English about Ukraine. My name is Volodymyr Yarmolenko, I'm a Ukrainian philosopher, journalist, and chief editor of Ukraine World. This was a regular conversation between my colleagues Anastasia Gerasimchuk and Daria Sinhaevska, journalist and analyst at Ukraine World. They analyzed key events in and around Ukraine during the last week. Let me remind you that you can support our work at patreon.com/ukraineworld. You can also support our volunteer trips to the front lines at PayPal, ukraine.resisting@gmail.com. You can find these links in the description of this episode. Stay with us and stand with Ukraine.